Right, everybody have a good week so far? Yes? No?
Yeah.
I'm going to put this away so I'm not tempted, you know? I wouldn't do a thing such as that, would I? Yeah, you guys know me. I'm excited for a Nerf battle next week. That's going to be pretty fun. So if you're into that sort of thing, then I encourage you to participate. If you're not, then stick around and watch the mayhem. Either way, it's going to be stories to tell to our children and our children's children to come. We're in a series right now called We Need to Talk. And when we hear that phrase, we need to talk, it's always like, oh my gosh. You know, it's like this weight, this like feeling of like this lump in your throat, like, what's it going to be about? What did I do now? Oh, no, I don't want to have this conversation. We need to talk. Last week, we talked about how we need to not be afraid of this phrase. Because this phrase, this we need to talk, this whole situation of talking together about what's going on is a way that we grow spiritually. Remember we talked about last week, we said, walk towards the pain. Walk towards the pain. It's painful to talk to people. It's painful to have that conversation we don't want to have. But sufferings produce endurance. Endurance produces character. Character produces hope. And hope makes us not ashamed because the love of God is made full in our hearts. And we saw that in Romans chapter 5. And so we need to walk towards the pain. And so many times in our life, because it's painful, because it's awkward, because it's like, I don't want to do that, we don't do it. And it prevents us from growing. And we said what's at stake is there might be bigger stuff, bigger conversations that we need to have, a relationship with a mom or a dad or a brother or sister or family member or someone else, a close friend that used to be a close friend that we're going to miss out on and we're going to go to heaven someday and say, God, why didn't you help me with this situation? He's going to say, well, I did. That's why you had that problem at work with that person. That's why you had that issue in the parking lot that one time. That's why you had that thing at church, you know, where that person... No, that's just because Christians are hypocrites and church is horrible. No, that was me providing conflict in your life so you could learn how to deal with it my way, so that you could get ready to deal with the big stuff. I had it all planned out for you, but you would not go and talk to him. So we said last week, the first step is going, and going is the hardest part. So this week we're going to talk about what do we do when we get there. We resist going and talking to people for a lot of reasons, but the risk of losing out on growth in our relationship should encourage us to go to people. So this week, we're going to talk about how to do that. How do we go to someone? And attitude is everything. Attitude really is everything. Brent wanted me to talk about attitude, so I'm going to talk about attitude. Actually, that's what it was already planned out. Attitude is everything. We're going to look at Matthew chapter 18, and I'm going to look at verse 15. Let's read verse 15 here. This is kind of our main text, Matthew chapter 18, verse 15 through like the rest of the chapter is our main text if you want to be reading it at home throughout the week. But this is what it says. If your brother sins against you, like that's going to happen. Okay, it's going to happen. Like it's pretty much guaranteed. If your brother sins against you, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. What? You mean don't put it on Facebook? You mean like don't tell everybody else under the sun? You mean like don't just like hate them secretly and behind their... No. Go tell them between you and him alone. Have this conversation. If he listens to you, you have gained your brother. You have gained your brother. That's what it says. You have gained your brother. As if gaining your brother is what you wanted, right? As if I really wanted to have a conversation with this person. As if I really wanted to have a relationship with this person, right? Jesus' goal is for you to gain your brother back. But I know what you're saying because I'm there too sometimes, right? That may be Jesus' goal, but that's not my goal, right? That is not my goal. I don't want to, personally, I kind of want to wallow in my bitter hatred till I'm pickled with rage. Just want to like just wallow and let's let that build up inside. You know, I want to not like that person. We want to be mad sometimes, don't we? We do. We kind of want it to fester. We want that to kind of boil up inside of us. And we want to have a reason to point our finger at someone else and to judge, right? We point and say, hey, this is why I want to judge. Now, you might not be that way, but you know what? We want to be right. A lot of people just want to be right. They want to be right. And if I'm mad at you, then I can't be wrong because this thing is just huge. So it doesn't matter what I did. I mean, you're wrong. And the longer I'm mad, the wronger you're bad. You know? The longer I'm mad at you, then the wronger your bad was. It grows exponentially in my mind. And this thing that maybe was a little thing now is a pretty big, disastrous, monstrous pile of, like, you're a horrible, rotten, evil person. Okay? And what happens is this allows me to see that I'm such a better person than you. Really. It's so clear to me because this wrong is that's been perpetuated probably not just on me, but now that it's happened to me, I could see it in everybody else. Like, this is an ongoing thing. You're just horrible, rotten. I'm so much better than that. It's so relieving, right? And we do this. And remember we talked about this, though, that pride prevents progress? Yeah, it does. But the dynamic that happens is when we get angry at someone and we're not looking to regain our brother. We're not looking to forgive. We're not looking to restore. We're looking to be mad and have a justification for being mad. Then that's just to pump up our ego and our pride and make us feel good because I'm not in the wrong with this. They wronged me. Now, that's not always the case. We're going to talk about that in a little bit, but let's talk about this scenario. It's kind of all about attribution. Attribution. Here's what's going on with this. When someone else does something wrong, we attribute it to their character or malicious intent, okay? When someone else does something wrong, we attribute that to their character. They have a flaw with their character, or they were malicious in their intent. They meant to do that to me, okay? We attribute it to them. But when we do the same thing or similar things, we excuse ourselves because we understand the unique situation that we're in. See what's going on there? So you do something and then obviously you have bad character, or you meant it because you're a mean, bad person. Like, you did that on purpose. But when I do it, well, there was extenuating circumstances. For instance, there's a story in Matthew chapter 18 that we're going to look at. Let's flip over there. Matthew chapter 18, we'll start in verse 21 and read down through verse 30. Then Peter came up and said to him, Lord, how often will my brother sin against me and I forgive him? As many as seven times. Peter's pretty generous. Like, so I forgive this my brother seven times? Because I'm such a great person. I'll give him seven chances. And Jesus says, I do not say to you seven times, but 70 times seven. So 449 times, kind of. No, what he's meaning is it's kind of infinite. It's ongoing. And here's the story he tells. Therefore, the kingdom of heaven may be compared to a king who wished to settle accounts with the servants. When he began to settle, one was brought to him who owed him 10,000 talents. One talent is about 20 years worth of wages. Put that in perspective. So 20 years worth of work is one talent, and this guy owes him 10,000 talents. So do a little math there. 10,000, add a zero. Now we're up to 100, and then put the two. So 200,000 years, like, right? Is that right? That's bad. That's not good. That's a lot of time, okay? If I did the math wrong, it's still a lot of time. And since he could not pay, who could pay that? That's like lifetimes of work. Who could pay that? Nobody could pay that. It's ridiculous. He's never going. It's like if you owed $1 billion. Like, I mean, the chances that you're going to like invent something, or you owe like $30 billion, like the chance you're going to invent something like Apple and be like, yeah, I'll be able to pay that off. Like, I'm going to work at it, you know? Like, your payments, like monthly payments would be like in the millions. Like, $400 million or something a month, you know? There's no way. It's just absurd. It's ridiculous. There's no way this could possibly be paid back. So this is what the master says. Since he could not pay, the master ordered him to be sold with his wife and children and all that he had in payment to be made. So literally, you're going to pay with your life, and I'm going to sell your family and everything you have to pay off whatever you can. So the servant fell on his knees, imploring him, have patience with me, and I will pay you everything. As if. Like, really? You're not going to be able to pay me everything. But out of pity for him, the master of that servant released him and forgave him the debt. That's pretty incredible. He just forgave him, like $30 billion. I forgive you. Go away. Don't mention it again. That's incredible. All right, now listen to this. When that same servant went out, he found one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 denarii. A denarii is about a day's wage. It's like a day's worth of work, okay? So he owes him like 100 days worth of work. That's reasonable. Like, that could be paid back, you know, within a reasonable amount of time. I mean, maybe it would take a few years, you know, but it's possible. Seizing him, he began to choke him, saying, "Pay what you owe." So his fellow servant fell down and pleaded with him, "Have patience with me and I will pay you." Sound familiar? Right? "Have patience with me and I will pay you." He refused and went and put him in prison until he should pay the debt. Okay, so what's going on here? My circumstances are different. This guy goes and he owes $30 billion or whatever, and he gets forgiven. But then he turns around and goes to this other guy who owes him like 100 days worth of work, and he's like choking him. He's like, "You gotta pay." Why would he do this? Was it because he was just a rotten person? Well, that's what we think, right? That's what I thought, at least, when I read this most of the time. I'm like, I would never do that. What an evil, rotten person. I am so glad that I would never be like this person. I cannot imagine anybody. And then I started understanding this attribution phenomenon that happens, where we attribute other people's wrongs to character flaws or malicious intent, but then we excuse ourselves because we understand the extenuating circumstances. And this is exactly what's going on here. This guy had extenuating circumstances. Maybe his wife was sick, you know, and so that's how he got all of this money that he owed him, you know, and so, like, there was no way he could pay it back, and it was just like this God thing, and he prayed, he tried to pay back, like, but he just couldn't. It was outside of his means, and so he understood, like, this guy's forgiven me, like, I need that. But this guy, well, he said he's going to pay me. How many times? He hasn't paid me back. He's just lazy. He's just wicked. So we attribute to them all this horrible character. And that's what's going on in the situation. Think about it. When someone's late for an appointment, someone else is late for an appointment, they don't care about me. They don't care about anyone but themselves. How dare they be late for this appointment? What a rotten... They don't have their priorities straight. They're lazy and they're unreliable, right? But when you're late for an appointment, well, I was up all night with the kids. I was up studying. They held me over late at work. Like, how could I? I tried. I had to get gas. Like, I really didn't want to be late. And I'm so sorry I'm late. I can't believe I slept in, right? When it's me, it's like a whole nother thing. But when it's someone else, it's like, man, you just don't care about anybody but yourself. It's the whole attribution thing, right? We attribute to them that it's a character problem or they meant it on purpose. But for us, it's like, well, of course, I get it. Like, I had this thing and I didn't want to do it and I'm really ashamed that I did, but that's what happened. What about a forgotten birthday or event anniversary? Well, someone does it to me. Oh, they hate me. You don't care about me. You don't love me. They're just rotten, horrible people. But when I do it, I could have swore I put that in my phone. I don't know what happened. It was supposed to, I would never, it doesn't mean I don't love you. Like, how could I forget your birthday? I don't know what happened. I got sidetracked. I got stuck with this thing at work and I meant to get the gift and I couldn't. Oh, I'm such a horrible father or husband, right? And so we get it when it's us, but when it's someone else, we attribute it to their character or that they did it on purpose. And here's what's going on. There's a gap. There will often be a gap between what is expected and what is delivered in our relationships with other people. This is just normal. There's going to be a gap. And what is expected, I expected you to do this, and this is what I got. I expected this, and this is what I got, you know? Like, I expected the $300, like, radio-controlled airplane, and I got the balsa wood rubber band kit. You know, like, there's this gap, you know? I expected this awesome thing and I got this. I expected you to be early and to buy me flowers when you came to my show, but you showed up 15 minutes into Act One and you didn't bring anything. There's gaps. There's these expectations, and then it's not met. And there's a gap. And what do we do? What do we fill the gap with? This all comes down to, what do we fill the gap with? We could fill it with one of two things. We could fill it with trust, or we could fill it with suspicion. We fill this gap with trust or with suspicion. Every time there's a gap, we fill it with trust or we fill it with suspicion. The gap is real, and the gap isn't to be ignored. If we ignore the gap, well, we're more than likely filling it with suspicion. We're like kind of putting it off in the back of our mind where it can collect rotten hatred. Okay, like the dust of bitterness, like in the back of our mind. And it starts, and the gap between what we expected and what they did grows, and it fills with suspicion that turns into nasty hate rage pretty quick. It does. Because we're not dealing with it, because we're not giving them. And in fact, the suspicion is then confirmed, even though we have no clue what extenuating circumstance, what was going on, because I can't, of course, go to them and talk about that. There's no way. Like, I couldn't do that. But anytime something then happens, it confirms the suspicion. So they're late again. I knew it. I knew. They forget again. I knew they would. I knew it, because they don't care. They don't call, or someone says something on Facebook. This happens all the time. They make a post on Facebook, you know, and it's like, they're talking about me. They're calling me out. What is that? You don't even know that. That just happened to me the other night. I saw this post on Facebook and like my heart sunk and I'm like, oh no, like I must have offended someone, or I thought my friend had offended someone and they were talking about them. And so I text the person. I'm like, oh my gosh, OMG, did you see this? You know, and I like send the screenshot and they're like, and so they talk to the person and come to, it wasn't even about that. They're like, no, this was about something at school. And I was like, oh. But how many times does this happen, like over and over? And you see it, and instead of saying something or asking or messaging or checking it out, you just let that confirm the suspicion. Oh, I knew it. I told you. See, there they go again. There it is again. And you just make the pile of hate rage grow, and it just gets bitter and ugly and nasty, and it just confirms your suspicion again and again and again, and the gap gets bigger and bigger and bigger. The other side, the other thing that we can fill it with is trust. You fill it with suspicion, or you can fill it with trust. The other side is trust. What if instead of suspicion, we filled the gap with trust? Just like we would for ourselves, right? Because we excuse a lot of behavior with ourselves, because we get it. Like, I'm living in my body. I know. My thought is not that I don't love my wife. I just didn't remember it was our anniversary, even though it's printed on the inside of my ring. And I've never forgotten our anniversary, right? No. But I was on a bike trip during our first one, you know? So, but like, I don't do it intentionally, but I get it. Like, I know I have a lot of stuff going on, or maybe I didn't fulfill that promise to my son because this crisis happened at work, you know? I'm a pastor. People get sick. People get really sick. I mean, crisis happens, you know? And so I get it, but for them, they don't get that. A little kid's not going to get that. And we oftentimes don't get that. What if instead of suspicion, we filled it with trust? So when someone's late, there's got to be a reason. I know that they would not. There's no way that my wife would intentionally say, I hate Ron, I'm going to make him late. Unless we were fighting ahead of time or something, you know. But for the most part, like if it's just out of the blue, right? If it's just out of the blue and she's late, it's not that she hates me. If I am late for something, it's not that I have malicious intent, or that if I'm not 15 minutes early for something, it's probably because, like, there was something horrible that happened in the middle of the night. My kid was throwing up, or my alarm didn't go off, or something horrible has happened, you know? And so we could attribute that. I know this isn't like them. Something had to happen. I hope they're okay. Maybe I could pray for them. They said something awful on Facebook. There's no way that could be about me. I wonder what's going on. I hope they're okay. Let me text them. and see if I could pray for them, help them out. Let me double check and make sure that we're okay. Or I'm going to go, so go talk to them and confirm the trust. Confirm the trust that you've already extended to them. So going to talk to them is not about like, they offended me and I have to go confront this and like condemn them and have this conversation about like jumping all over down their throat and I hate you and why did you do that to me? It's, I'm already extending them trust because I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt that I would give myself. I refuse to believe until I absolutely have to that they did this intentionally to hurt me, to harm me, or because they're a rotten bad person. So I'm gonna say Brent wasn't late on purpose. I'm gonna go to Brent and I'm gonna say, what happened? And he's gonna tell me, I had to stop and get gas. I'm gonna go, oh, that's what I figured. You know what I mean? How much better is that, for instance, than just letting it kind of soil in your mind, in the mind of distrust? We go to people with the purpose of regaining our brother, of confirming the trust. And you could say something like this. This is a great way to say it. I can't imagine that you meant it this way, but when you did this, I felt this. Okay? I can't imagine that you meant it this way, but when you were late, I felt abandoned. Okay? When you forgot, I felt really unloved. Oh no, there's no way. I'm so sorry I made you feel that way. I didn't mean that. That was wrong. I can't stand myself for being that. Would you please forgive me? And here's the point. Forgiveness is the goal. Forgiveness is the goal. That's the point for this week. Forgiveness is the goal. When you're going towards someone, forgiveness is the goal. If you have in your mind that you want to get revenge, that you want to get retribution, you will never, ever be satisfied. How many movies do you have to watch where people kill everybody and then they're miserable? Come on. It doesn't work. The Bible even says, vengeance is mine, I'll repay, saith the Lord. Like, it doesn't make anybody happy. You just become bitter and like this horrible murderer. Okay, just watch movies. It's like, any story that you've read of revenge, it never turns out well. It just makes you sick, and we're going to see what else is at stake with that. But Matthew chapter 18, read this with the idea of forgiveness is the goal. Verse 15 through 18, if your brother sins against you, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. If he listens to you, you've gained your brother. But if he does not listen, take one or two others along with you, that every charge may be established by the evidence of two or three witnesses. Why are you bringing witnesses with you? I used to think it was so that we could prove how rotten and evil you are. No, you're bringing witnesses to double check if maybe you're hearing them wrong. If you're not giving them the benefit of the doubt, if you're blinded by your rage, by your own upset, self-righteous pride, that I'm not listening to what they're saying. They're saying, I'm sorry, I was wrong, I messed up, but you're coming back saying they don't care. Maybe they're not using those words. Maybe they're not saying it right. Maybe you're approaching them, how could you be so evil and rotten and blah, blah. I wasn't, because in their mind they weren't. That's not what they meant. But you're not having the great communication skills. So you take someone else with you so they can help you work it out. So hopefully trust can be saved. Hopefully forgiveness can happen, because forgiveness is the goal. And it says, but if he does not listen, take two or three others with you, that every charge may be established by the evidence of two or three witnesses. If he refused to listen to them, they all agree, this person does not want to change, they did wrong, they're not willing to listen, then tell it to the church. If he refuses to listen even to the church, let him be to you as a Gentile and a tax collector. This is the last resort. This is three chances here. Because forgiveness is the goal. So you're giving them chance after chance after chance and elevating and accelerating the process. So you go to someone personally. As a Christian, this is what we're supposed to do. Hey, that hurt me. I had a problem with that. When you did this, I can't imagine you did this on purpose to be malicious, but when you did this, this is how I felt. And when they say, I didn't mean it that way, I'm sorry, I was wrong, then you've gained your brother. But if they say, you're blowing this out of proportion, that's not what I meant, maybe even then, that's not what they meant. But if they get in your face and I hate you and I'm glad you felt that way because I wanted you to feel that, you know, well, now maybe you need to go get some other friends. From Christian friends, not like rotten people that have, you know, firepower, but people who love you and love them and love God. And you go and you take them and you address it again. Come on, this is another chance because forgiveness is the goal. I want their heart to break. I want them to come around because I want to be restored. I want them to be forgiven. They don't hear you. So then you go to the church and you go to Pastor Joe. You come to me. Hey, Ron, this is a situation. We went. We talked. I talked to them one-on-one. I talked to them with this person. They still won't hear it. Okay, well, let's have a meeting together. Maybe they'll hear then. If they still don't, well, then there's nothing you could do. You've done all that you can to seek forgiveness for them. That doesn't mean that you don't forgive, though. It doesn't mean. Because this is exactly what Jesus did for us. Think about it. You were in sin. You were a mess. You didn't deserve to be forgiven. In fact, even after you came to Jesus, chances are you probably kind of sinned again and 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 again. And Jesus, because forgiveness is the goal, continually stretches and reaches out to us. Says, I love you. I want you to come back. I want this relationship restored because you mean that much to me. Because I love you. That's what Jesus did. If forgiveness wasn't the goal for Jesus when he came to die on the cross, do you think he would have died on the cross? Did he not have every right in the world to point at Ron and say, well, you're a rotten sinner. You deserve to burn in hell. No way I'm dying for you. Yeah, he's got every right to say that, but he didn't. He extended and extended and extended and filled the gap with his own blood and his own grace and his own forgiveness so that we could rebuild the trust between us and God. That's exactly what Jesus did for us. God went to the extreme to fill the gap to reach our hearts. And some of you, you're saying maybe, la-dee-da. That's great, Ron. You know, Jesus and the forgiveness and stuff, but my issues aren't because someone was late, Ron. My issues aren't because someone forgot my birthday or because someone forgot my anniversary. You don't get this. I was abused. I had a serious situation, Ron. This isn't just like they accidentally spilled a coffee. This is serious stuff. This is serious stuff. What do you do about that? Forgiveness maybe is not your goal because you cannot imagine a world where you could forgive them because they don't deserve that. They don't deserve that. And you know what? You're right. When people abuse us and go to that level, and it's without a doubt, like it's not like I'm blowing this out of proportion. It's clearly malicious intent. They don't deserve forgiven. They don't. And forgiveness, though, doesn't always mean that trust is restored. And though we want to fill the gap with trust, we do. And we want to fill that until we absolutely can't. But there comes a point, and even it said in Matthew 18, there comes a point when this is the reality that this person does not want to be restored. Or this person has gone so far and broken a boundary so deep in the situations like abuse, sexual abuse, physical abuse, constant verbal abuse, someone who is just abusing your time or has no boundaries in their own life and they're constantly coming and invading and taking over. Situations like this, you got to cut it off. But it doesn't mean that you release the, it doesn't mean that you get to carry the anger and the bitterness. That has to be released. You do have to forgive. And forgiveness means then releasing the bitterness and the anger towards that person and saying, I understand we can never probably have the same relationship again. I get that. But I refuse to carry this bitterness and this anger. And I release you from that. Matthew chapter 18, verse 31 through 35, it shows us why this is important. It says, the rest of our story. Remember, the guy refused to pay, so he puts him in prison. The servant who was forgiven the 10,000 talents. And when his fellow servants saw that this had taken place, they were greatly distressed, and they went and reported to the master all that had taken place. Then the master summoned him and said to him, "You wicked servant, I forgave all of your debt. That was, way beyond being able to be paid. And because you pleaded with me. And should you not have had mercy on your fellow servant as I had mercy on you?" And in anger, his master delivered him to the jailers until he should pay all his debt. Now listen to what Jesus says. This is so important. "So also, my heavenly Father will do to every one of you if you do not forgive your brother from your heart." You see, we want God to extend his trust and his forgiveness to us. We depend on it daily because daily we kind of mess up in some way or another. And we need God. And here's what's at stake. Here's what's at stake if you say, "Well, I can't do that. I can't do that." When we don't forgive, we're setting ourselves up to not be forgiven. We're setting ourselves up to not be forgiven. Jesus plainly says, "This is what my Father will do to you if you don't forgive other people." Our own walk with God, our own growth is completely stalled when we refuse to forgive, when we don't forgive. That's why forgiveness has got to be the goal. Forgiveness has got to be the goal. You've got to go to someone and give them that benefit of the doubt, the trust. I want them to have a great excuse. I want this to be okay. I want to forgive them. And even when they're just completely rotten and they're completely cut off to the idea of a restored relationship, or they've done something so bad that it would be unhealthy for you to restore that relationship completely like it was, you still say, "I'm releasing them. I refuse to carry these feelings of anger and bitterness, and I know they're going to come up because I can't always control my feelings, but when they do, I'm going to remind myself, no, I forgave them, and I forgive them again today, and I'll forgive them again tomorrow if that comes up again, because I don't want to live and carry that." And it might take you 6 months of doing that 30 times a day. Because some of this stuff is deep and it's painful. But you got to do it. And the more you know Christ, the closer you get to Christ and you realize, as messed up as I am, he forgives me. I can certainly forgive my wife. I can certainly forgive those who injure me. I can certainly forgive the other people that are close to me. I can forgive because I have to, because I don't want my walk with God to be stalled because of what someone else did that I won't let go. If I can go to them and forgive them, then I can ensure my own spiritual health. And I know you're thinking, "That hurts, Ron. That stinks. That's hard." And you're right. You're right. We have to walk towards the pain. Forgiveness is the goal. You are living like Jesus when you forgive others. Let's pray. Dear God, I thank you for this group tonight, Lord, and this is such an important subject to discuss. This is your heart, God. You came for this purpose, to forgive us, to restore us to you. When we had no ability, zero ability to get back to you, zero ability to pay it back, to earn your trust. It's impossible. And you made a way in spite of us and all that we did. Lord, help us to understand that we have to live that same way. We have to embody that as we become more like you, as we grow to have the character that you have, Lord. This is important, and it's not just for the other person's benefit. It's for our benefit. Lord, help us to fill the gap with trust. Help us to make forgiveness the goal, so that we don't let something go for a day or two, that we actively seek out that person so that we can forgive, so that we can restore the relationship, so that we can restore a relationship with you. God, be with us. This is going to be difficult this week, but I know that you are powerful and you will give us the strength to do what we need to do, to have the conversations we need to have. In Jesus' name, amen.